You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, you're watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all across the country. And if you ever run into crisis, you're always looking for what do we do next? Today, I've got the perfect recipe for any crisis with my good friend, Marty Wade. Don't miss this. Do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a second. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. We are having so much fun doing these. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you for all of your suggestions. We are just having, like I said, we're just having so much fun and a lot of great comments, feedback, and we're going to try to get all of them to you as best we can. And today I've got a really dear friend of mine on, and we're going to be talking about how we can deal with crisis. And he's got a great formula you can apply in everything, not only dentistry, but your own personal life. Now, a couple show notes before we get started. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So if you're watching this during the live broadcast and you have a question, feel free to add a question to the feed and I'll ask Marty the question directly, because we want to make sure you're getting the right answers for the things you might be thinking about. Also, if you're watching this later on, maybe after the live broadcast, and you still have questions, add them after. And again, we'll make sure that we get you the right answers to some of the things you might be thinking about. Now, my guest today, dear friend of mine, I've known him for a very long time, and it took us a while to get this all together because you've been traveling all over the world and doing some fun stuff. Marty Wade, great, amazing oral surgeon in Minnesota. And so people have gotten a chance for you to see you speak on occasion. I got a chance to know you through the Seattle Study Club Symposium Network years ago, and our friendship has just developed. And you're going to see why this is such a special human being in a second. But if people don't know who you are, Marty, who are you? And tell us a little bit about your story.
Wow. It goes way back. I started out as an orderly in the hospital, just doing those kinds of duties and things. Mm-hmm. And my idea was to proceed on in some type of medical profession. I wound up being a physician's assistant in rural Iowa, delivering babies, seeing sore throats, doing all that kind of thing. Did that for a number of years. And then I was on call all the time, and it was really getting kind of tiring. And the town that I was in, the dentist seemed to be out playing golf and having a pretty good time. So I thought, man, maybe that's a good place to go. Yeah. So I wound up going to the University of Iowa for dental school. Great, phenomenal school where they took really good care of me. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, well, I know what the reason is. I missed the medical side of things a little bit, the surgical side of things. And so I decided to go into oral surgery, which gave me a little bit of the medicine and a little bit of the dentistry. And I am coming up on my 30th year as an oral surgeon.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm sure you've got some great stories to tell, too.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Now, tell us why this is so important. Like, this is a very important topic as you see people stressed, not only in dentistry, because you guys deal with the emergency side of dentistry often, and how this, you know, first of all, why is this so important? And then the second question I have for you is, why do you have to have, or why do you need a mnemonic for this? Because it's important, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think everybody knows what a mnemonic is, but basically it's just a way of remembering information so that it's readily retrievable. I tend to do a lot with taking one letter out of the thing I want to remember, and then I structure that in such a way to be able to recall it quickly. All of the dentists who went through anatomy remember having different mnemonics for different areas of the body. If you wanted to remember all of the branches of the external carotid or whatever it might be, you needed a mnemonic to remind you. What I've learned since being in surgery is that if you're in the middle of a crisis, let's say that you've got a bleeder at the base of the skull and you need to tie something off to get that bleeding stopped, you don't have time to sit around and then make your mnemonic and try to remember it. And so that anatomical information comes back quickly when you can just go boom, 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 boom. I remember exactly what the mnemonic was. This is that artery. Here's the clip. Now the bleeding stopped. So that's the importance that we've learned in surgery, is to have something that when you're nervous or sometimes even scared, if you're facing a real crisis at that time, that you can immediately fall back to and start to process information and correct the problem.
Right, right. And so tell us about the mnemonic that you came up for this one, how it was developed and how it works.
Yeah, you know, actually I was doing a fair amount of speaking, and I was at Linda Miles has a great group called the Speaking Consulting Network that I know you're well familiar with. And Lois Banta is now the director of that group. And I was getting ready for a competition called Spotlight on Speaking. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to put this stuff together, and I thought, you know, I really want to talk about crisis management. We had some things in our family that we had to deal with. And all of a sudden, it was just kind of there. I thought, okay, number one, you have to tell yourself the truth. And the mnemonic, by the way, is TORCH, T-O-R-C-H. So number one, tell yourself the truth about the situation. Establish order. Begin to put things in a sequential form so you can deal with them. Take responsibility. In other words, don't cast blame on somebody else, but take the responsibility for change yourself. Act with courage, which sometimes is the most difficult thing to do. There can be courageous acts that aren't like dragging somebody out of a forest fire. Maybe it's something like having a difficult conversation with a friend, for example. And then the final H in the mnemonic is don't lose hope. Right. And great studies for why hope is so important to us. So, you know, those things, that's kind of, as you and I were talking about, Kirk, that's our recipe for crisis management.
Yeah, absolutely. And when patients come in, obviously different, you know, different levels of trauma, or even in your personal life, you know, let's go through each one of these. So when you talk about telling yourself the truth, sometimes it can get a little convoluted. You know, there are a lot of times you just need data. You're going to need an X-ray. You're going to need to gather everything. Data doesn't lie. So sometimes just getting calm and kind of surveying the situation. Give us an example how that would work in surgery.
Yeah. So just last Tuesday, I was assisting my partner, Dr. Ackerman, with a big facial surgery case, a big orthognathic case. And we had just done the dissection to get down to the mandible to do the splits. And we just had this pesky little bleeder. And he retracted around it. We cauterized the area, began to do the bone cuts, and it was just this ooze. And, you know, he and I are going, you know, is that going to stop? Do we need to go back? So we put everything down. We went back. We found it again. It happened again. And finally, we just exposed more of the area. We saw exactly the vessel that was causing us the problem, and we got it cauterized fully so that it wasn't an issue for us anymore. But that kind of thing happens in surgery all the time. So, for example, tell yourself the truth. okay, is this going to keep bleeding, or do I need to go up there and really do something about it? Because sometimes a bleeder, if you just pack it off, it'll clot and it'll be fine, and you don't really have to go back there. But there are times where you have to just say, no, this is not getting better. I'm going to put down what I'm doing. I'm going to correct that situation, and then I'm going to move on.
Yeah, and this is powerful too, because the best thinkers in the world know that there's a huge gap between stimulus and response. Covey used to say that the whole world exists between stimulus and response. There are things that happen to us and then how we respond. Sometimes I've seen you and even great operators, they're just calm in the midst of a storm. Say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And you see a great surgeon, anybody, the ability to tell themselves the truth, gather some data, and just collect themselves. Now, go into, you know, how the response, like, take us through that. So, the order. So the order, when you start to prioritize this, so you're going to be looking at the data, probably, you know, putting it in order of priority. Is that correct?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And every situation's different. For example, but in that type of situation, in a surgical situation, it all flows pretty quickly. So Tell yourself the truth about what's going on with the bleeding. Establish order means, okay, what's my next step? And you're thinking, usually in surgery, you're thinking three or four steps down the line. Take responsibility. Well, it's me. I'm the guy who's got to do it. So there's really no questions about that. Act with courage. You know, that comes in sometimes when the situation is not so clear cut. Let's say if you down fracture the maxilla and you've got a bleeder at the base of the skull on the posterior wall of the sinus that you can't really see, but you think you know where it is, knowing that there may be a bigger vessel behind it, sometimes you need to have courage just to go, okay, yeah, I'm cauterizing that. I'm not going to worry about that. And so that's your action. And then the final thing, hope. You wouldn't think that that would be such a big factor, but let me just relate stories that I've heard from other surgeons, general surgeons, for example, who were operating on the aorta and truly could not stop the bleeding, and the patient was in danger of dying. But what they found was that as long as they continued to look for some way to improve the situation, that they were ultimately successful, as opposed to saying, patient's going to die, I've got to just figure out what I'm going to say to the family. And that's pretty well documented in a number of different texts. One of the best I can recommend is called The Survivor's Club by Ben Sherwood, where he talks about a lot of factors that lead to survivorship.
Really? Yeah. And you also hear about this in cancer treatment. You know, when you go to an incredible cancer treatment facility, they always say more than half of just getting started with this process is the belief that you're going to get through to the other side, because it sets a chain reaction, not only mental, but physical, through this whole process. And I've just heard that over and over again. You've got to constantly look for a solution. And I agree because it's very easy to lose hope and say, look, this is just, it's not going to go any further. Now, how do you, when you do this, you have the mnemonic for yourself and you know, you have several other doctors. I'm sure you guys talk about this. How well do you incorporate this with the rest of your team? Because you've got your surgical assistants with you. You've got people at the front. So if I'm a dentist watching this, how would I incorporate this with the rest of my team?
Yeah. It's a really good question. I think that my team has assimilated these things by how we handle any type of basic emergency. I don't think that I've probably done as good a job of unpacking all of this directly for them. But, you know, we've got many of our assistants have been there 15, 20 years, and they just know how we do things. And so they're already... And each one of them, by the way, has their own role in a crisis situation. And they're already embarking on what their role is while I'm trying to manage the immediate patient in front of me. And so even though I haven't done as good a job, they have, by modeling, I think they've assimilated that information. But let me say one more thing about this from a business standpoint, and maybe you are going to get there. And talking, thinking about with my partners and things. Let's say, for example, the practice has just hired a new associate. And far as you know, this person is doing great and they're so nice and you really like having dinner with them. And all of a sudden the staff comes to you and they say, Dr. Wade, do you know that Dr. Whoever, do you know that he doesn't do it this way or the same way you do? And so then you embark on this, okay, what's the truth of this situation? And all of a sudden, then you start getting more feedback from more staff members. And eventually, you understand that the truth is you've got a problem with your associate. Then you go to establishing order in the situation. Okay, what are my legal responsibilities with this person? What are my personal, moral, and ethical responsibilities with this person? Can I help this person improve what they're trying to do? Can I help them become a great surgeon? If not, then you come to taking responsibility. Who's going to take this action? My partners and I, you know, would be responsible for something like that. Perhaps ultimately it comes to a point where you say, you know, we just need to part ways. It's not going to work out, which calls for you to act with courage. And then the hope comes in that if that person's gone and all of a sudden you're working more days and more hours, you just have to be hopeful that the right person is out there and you're going to find them eventually.
Yeah. And that's good business practice, because in over 20 years of doing this, sometimes people are like, oh, I can't lose this one particular team member, but it's not. And, you know, I've never met a dentist where they lost a team member that wasn't the best for them and they went backwards. It's just not happened in my years of experience. And then the hope that things are going to get better, they always do. And really, sometimes it's important to go through these challenges that you actually get to the hope, because it's a great exercise to say, look, I've been here before. We're going to be fine. It's interesting. I would be very curious as how do pilots use this, because I don't know anything about pilot training, but I've been in enough turbulence. You and I travel enough where, you know, the plane will be shaking all over the place. And then they come back on and go, sorry about that, folks. We just had a little bit of an air pocket there. Got it under control. While the guy probably went to the bathroom to change his undergarments, you know, type of a thing. So they have to collect themselves and come back and establish all of those things. So there's just too much to think about. Now, when you see young dentists, you know, and especially young oral surgeons coming into the scene, how important, again, I guess, how important is this just to have, you know, either a decision tree or, you know, when you're getting started in this, because it really does establish confidence in a clinical setting for the, you know, we talk about the complete clinician. Part of that is really just learning from the best and establishing some type of modality or decision tree making when it comes to complexities in dentistry, right?
Yeah. You know, our model for bringing new people in for a long time was basically just for them to spend some time watching us operate, and then we kind of put them out into the real world and gave them that responsibility. But we have a great young man joining us in July, and my partners and I have decided that we're going to really embark on a mentorship program with him. So we'll start out with him watching us, seeing how we do things, what's the flow of surgery, what are the responsibilities of our team members and such. But then we're going to spend time watching him operate. Now, this is going to be August. This is going to be the busiest month of our entire year. Right. But this investment is career long, and it's all of our careers. And so we've all decided that we're going to take that time to be with him. We're going to have a debriefing time and then talk through some of these things. Okay, what if this patient had lost their airway? What would your next step be? And what if there had been bleeding that you couldn't get to? Just go through numbers of scenarios to make sure that we're all on the same page. Because as you and I know, having done this for a long time, the biggest problems come when expectations are different, when the assistant's expectations are not what your expectations are. So we want to make sure that we're good mentors and good communicators so that everybody's expectations are the same.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. And you know, when I got started in this, and even when you got started in dentistry, there was a concept called preceptorships. You know, you got heavily involved with the clinicians that were before you. I remember on Fridays, we used to go over to a dentist's office and he'd say, look, I want to show you a couple of things I've learned the hard way. Don't do this and don't do that. And really some of the thinking that came out of that was, it was groundbreaking and career changing, you know, just how you would see them operate, how they would, you know, touch a patient or how they would discuss a challenge. It was incredible. And we don't see that anymore just because all of us are just too busy sometimes. So this is a critical piece of our profession in for the future. So,
yeah, it really is. And I couldn't agree with you more. You know, back when I was a PA in rural Iowa, one of the older docs who had been there, gosh, I don't know, probably almost 40 years, he'd been practicing family medicine, really did that. He really took me aside. And of course, PAs back in 1977, we were not very well accepted. You know, we were really the new kids on the block. But he was secure enough in who he was to take me aside and say, okay, let's talk through a few things. You know, how are you going to treat that? Well, yeah, that may be what you learned, but you know, in practical sense, that's really not going to do it. So I did have a mentor like that, but it's the tyranny of the urgent is what keeps us, you know, okay, well, I was kind of thinking I'd go play golf or I could talk to you. Well, you know, you just have to say, what's really important. You know, the golf course is always going to be there. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. And I find not only in our personal lives, but in our businesses, sometimes we just spend so much energy on things that don't matter. And it's the big challenge for us is just really figure out what's so important. Now, when you look at young dentists, I've got to ask you this question too. The future of dentistry, there's a lot of younger dentists that are watching this. You know, there are younger kids in dental school checking out the landscape. And you and I believe the same thing. This is a very exciting profession. It is hands down the best profession ever. As a matter of fact, three of the top 10 professions in the United States to have are general dentist, you know, orthodontist, and then oral surgeon. Oral surgeon is number 9, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, you know.
No.
But it's pretty amazing. What do you see and what would be your advice if you had to start all over? You know, somebody coming out of dental school, looking at this profession, you're a great leader here. What would be your advice to them?
I think maybe the same advice that I got from a good friend of mine who's an OB-GYN doc. You don't have to do everything. You know, even in oral surgery, even though we're a specialty, you've got cosmetics, you've got orthognathic surgery, you've got dental alveolar, you've got implantology. You don't have to do everything. Decide what you really like to do and try to focus on that. Not that you have to totally eliminate those other things, but you don't have to spread yourself so thin that you really haven't mastered anything. And the more things that you do that you enjoy and that you become better and better at is going to make for a lot more practice enjoyment. I have a good friend who's an orthopedic surgeon. Actually, you know that I go to Ukraine every year to take care of orphan kids, and he's the guy who started that mission. And I said, Paul, how are you enjoying practice these days? He said, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I said, well, what do you think made the change? And he said, when I quit doing stuff I thought I was being forced to do. He said, that was really what made the change. Yeah. So I think that would be the first thing is you don't have to do everything. It's a phenomenal profession and there's plenty to do, just finding out what your niche is and then get really, really, really good at that. And life gets good.
Yeah, it does. I like the word joy at this stage of the game for myself. You know, when you find yourself in your circle, you're just experiencing more joy. And also, too, I think self-awareness has a big piece of this, don't you think?
Like,
you have to make these mistakes in dentistry to go, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, I always joke that the first employee I ever hired, I mean, she was crazy. She was insane. Like when I hired her, I was like, this is awesome. And then, gosh, I hope she's not watching this. But, you know, it was one of those deals where I was like, I got to let her go. She might, you know, do something really crazy and then let her go. And you find out later that that's an important recipe for your success so that you know never to do that again. So I completely agree. I think as people mature, you realize this is what I love to do. And it's all around expectations, and the more you can match your own expectations with your actions, I think that's powerful. Now, we did get a great question. I love our buddy Deepak. He always asks great questions, and this is an awesome oral surgery question. You know, as an oral surgeon who receives referrals from general dentists, what are some of the examples of the manner, communicative style and method in which they refer that's impressed you? What have you seen that you see from the referral standpoint that you go, wow, that is really, really good? Anything you can speak of?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that has really made my life more enjoyable in terms of the referral dance, we'll call it, you know, has been our involvement with Seattle Study Club. Mm-hmm. You know, we were one of the original clubs, so we're coming up on our 25th year. Wow. Yeah, which is just great. And we just had our closing dinner the other night. We had, I don't know, about 50 people there. And just looking around the room, it was, you know, these folks are all my friends. Mm-hmm. And so it's a whole different relationship, because it is all about relationships. I think referrals are all about relationships. The days of the great doc with a bad bedside manner, totally gone in my book. Because there's a lot of great docs that have a good bedside manner. Right. So it's, to me, it's all about relationships. And Seattle Study Club has allowed us to step out of the, hey, would you like to have lunch? And by the way, you and I both know my ulterior motive is to get you to send more patients. It doesn't have to be that way. So I would say that that's probably the thing that has changed our patterns the most. I also think, too, kind of that same principle we talked about before is you don't have to get referrals from everybody. Right. There are people who are just going to have a better relationship with a different surgeon, and that's got to be okay with you. You can't take that personally. You just try to keep doing a good job for every one of your referrals, and at least what I've found over the last 30 years is just that everything else kind of takes care of itself if you just keep trying to do a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the documentation side, or just because you have an incredible network, is there anything specific? Because, you know, I think I can relate with Deepak's question, because I look at the referral process, whether it be an endo or oral surgery, there's so little detail. Now, I would imagine you probably don't get that a lot, but what are some of the things either from the documentation or image standpoint that you go, that's really special?
Yeah. I think the more information that we can get, and sometimes it has to be by phone call, because if a situation is really complicated, if the dentist just calls and says, hey, want to give you some background on what this is. But from solely a documentation standpoint, the more that the dentist writes about the patient, the better background we have, and the more studies that they can forward to us, then we don't have to appear like we're getting all these additional studies on top of what the dentist has already done. And now with the software being what it is, you know, we just email anything other than a cone beam, we just email back and forth between our referring offices and such. So I think the other thing is, for the patient, when I can walk into the room and I can say, Mrs. Smith, I just heard from Dr. Jones, and he was just explaining to me where you've been on this journey and that he would like to have our opinion on what we can do to maybe help the situation. Well, the team concept of that then for Mrs. Smith is huge, because she knows that Dr. Jones went out of his or her way to contact us so that her visit would be more efficient.
Right. Right. And it's powerful, because you're speaking to the whole concept of advocacy. I mean, we're now, you know, I think that's really the future of super high quality dentistry, is being alongside the patient and really showing people, look, I care. I did the due diligence. This handoff is what we call an elegant handoff. You know, we're going to be proactive in making sure everything goes well. And it shows in all your processes. So good stuff. Any other thoughts when you have, you know, you look at either the crisis management or the future dentistry? Because Like I said, you and I believe the same thing. There's a world of possibility out there, but I run into some dentists, as you do too, even speaking to great audiences, they're like, the future's not that great. I mean, do you ever remember early in your career, maybe losing a little bit of hope and maybe some of the things that you got out of, that rut?
Yeah. Early on? Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, when I came out of dental school, let's see, that was 84. Yeah. I had dentists in the community saying, there's no way you're going to pay your loans back. I said, they've been graduating so many students. You know, that was when they had government capitation for the dental schools. Right. Iowa had just cut down to 95 students. Minnesota, I think, had, 125 or something at that time. And so the dentists out in practice were saying, you'll never make a buck. There's no place for you to go. And, you know, I've never experienced that. Life has always moved along very nicely. And I'm grateful for that. Have I had times of maybe losing a little bit of hope myself? I think that, almost sometimes the curse of being so busy that you don't know how you're going to keep up. You know, we always balance that with, I know I'm not doing a great job at this, but I don't know how I can do better, with why don't people like me anymore? You know, if you're not busy enough, you want to know why don't they like me anymore? If you're too busy, you're trying to figure out how you can still do a great job for every referring doc. So there are some times when we've gone through that for a period of time. But, you know, I think that's where a strong family structure and great friends and colleagues who can say, oh, yeah, I was there. Yeah, you know, what you're feeling isn't unusual. I think it's really important, and maybe gets back to the young dentist again, is to have those kind of people in your life. Have some older dentists who will speak truth to you. Have guys in your age group, guys or girls in your age group, that will speak truth to you and say, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going through. I think it's when you start to internalize those concerns that then they become bigger and bigger. I think when you can verbalize them and get them out there, they lose some of their power.
Yeah, I agree. And we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. You know, dentistry can be a very isolating profession. And I think it could be even more isolating the better you get, because, you know, it's not like you sit in your office and people check on you all the time and go, hey, how you doing? You're working hard at this, type of a thing. And now I think the response, you talk about responsibility and the torch. It's now the responsibility of the younger dentist to seek out what you're you know, basically describing, which is the mentor aspect. I remember nobody had mentors lined up for me. I didn't come into this and they're like, hey, I got four people. You're going to stay really close to them. You know, I had to pick and choose. And a lot of them came back to the core value exercise, but also putting yourself in a neighborhood where you're going to run into some people. That's why we love the Seattle Study Club Symposium. It's not so much the education. I mean, you're immersed not only with the educators, but all the directors, and you find everybody's dealing with the same type of stuff. But you're exactly right. You've got to put yourself in a situation or a neighborhood where you can win, because what you come back is the layered hope is just stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah. I think if you get back to the mnemonic, to torch, you tell yourself the truth about, you know, I'm not happy in my practice right now. You establish the order of, okay, what can I do about that? I can talk to people, I can read more, I can attend conferences. You take, as you said, take responsibility for calling those people to try to set something up. But then it really takes courage to say, hey, you know, this is where I am. Thinking that everybody else is doing great and life is good, it sometimes when you're kind of down a little bit, it takes courage to say, you know, I'm just not where you guys are. What are your thoughts? And then, of course, the maintaining the hope perspective. So again, it's a universally applicable mnemonic, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And Deepak, gosh, he's so good with the questions here. He asked this one. They say there is no remaining referral after the oral surgeon. Yeah, you know, you can disagree or agree with that one. Have you ever felt over your head in a crisis situation, maybe in oral surgery?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I just sent a patient down to Mayo Clinic, down to Dr. Chris Viazzi down there, who's chairman of the department. It was a procedure that I didn't feel I had done enough of to be really good at doing. And I knew that they do a ton of them. So yeah, absolutely. Or let's say for cancer patients, you know, we don't do cancer surgery or anything like that. So we immediately refer those out. So yeah, for sure. There are certainly lots of referrals past us, for sure.
Right. Absolutely. The key is probably knowing that line.
It is.
And knowing when and when to not go there, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And that's what keeps you being a safe clinician instead of a cowboy. And the person that benefits from that, of course, is the patient. But also your own physical status too, because the more of those things you do that you're really not good at and you're stressing out about, it's just not beneficial to keep doing those.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, buddy, I'm so incredibly grateful that you're able to carve out some time. And I know this is a while to get you on the schedule, but I want to have you back. Now, if people want to get a hold of you, Marty, how do they get a hold of you?
We just recently changed the name of our practice to True North Oral Surgery and Implants. Mm-hmm. True North being a concept of having a vision for where excellence is and constantly maintaining that direction. And so True North Oral Surgery and Implants, our website is just www.truenorth, it's actually truenorthoralsurgery.com. People can certainly call too if they want. I don't know if you guys want the number.
Sure, why not?
Sure. Area code 651. 578-7000.
Yeah. And I'll say this firsthand, Marty is one of the best, super helpful, a great human being. So if you have any questions, he is awesome at being.
Well, and I love talking to people and I don't have a lot invested in those conversations other than just to help. So Absolutely. Yeah, I'm always happy to do that.
Awesome, buddy. Well, thanks for being on. Now stay on for just a second while we say goodbye to everybody. But hey, if you're watching today, thank you so much for watching. We're crazy grateful that, we're growing every single day. And if you enjoyed today, do me a favor, hit the share button, share it with your friends, because obviously we'd love for you to share the good word of this kind of information. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys have a great evening. Thank you.